And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. Hope you had a great week. Happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish listeners today. Thank you for all your emails and comments that we received. Jim from Brunswick, Ohio, asked about soil carbon sequestration and how it really works, a topic I spoke about in my intro last week during the show on December 5th. Well, in a nutshell, last year's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the leading international scientific authority on global warming, reported that even if we ended all greenhouse gas emissions today, which is technically impossible, it would take about 100 years for atmospheric carbon dioxide, or CO2, to return to 1985 levels, which is not quickly enough to reverse the increase of the Earth's temperature. So in a way, we have surpassed the point of no return. On a hopeful note, however, healthy soil and our relationship to it again provides an answer. Soil has a natural ability to sequester or pull carbon out of the atmosphere and to store it back into the soil. That's part of a natural cycle, and it works like this. Plants convert CO2 from the atmosphere through photosynthesis. So as plants grow, carbon is captured in their roots. When plants die, their roots remain in the soil, at least to some degree, serving as a storage unit for carbon. Soil organic matter, which is all the stuff you see in healthy soil, roots, other plant materials, all the life in the soil, is approximately 50% carbon. So as we increase soil organic matter, or life in the soil, we build soil and reduce CO2 in the atmosphere. In fact, over the past 150 years, more than a third of the CO2 we have added to the atmosphere has come from changes in land use and poor land management, not from burning fossil fuels. So positive changes in land use could potentially sequester significant amounts of carbon into the soil, and restoring even a portion of the lost carbon in our soils could represent a significant reduction in atmospheric greenhouse gases and help curb global warming. So again, our future as a society depends on our relationship to our soil, or as Teddy Roosevelt said, the nation that destroys its soil destroys itself. Or since this is a really positive show, on the other way around, a nation that rebuilds its soil rebuilds itself. Jim from Brunswick, Ohio, thanks for your question, and I hope my answer helped to clarify the significance of soil management in addressing global warming. If you have a comment or question, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. And on the note of global warming, I spoke to a class of fourth graders the other day, and a boy raised his hand and asked me what I thought of our California governor's plans to prepare for Plan B. As you may know, Governor Schwarzenegger is pulling together a team of experts to outline what we have to do in case we can't reverse global warming. I said, you know, it's usually a good idea to have a Plan B, but in this case, I'd rather stay fully focused on the solutions. I sounded hopeful in front of the class, but my stomach hurt, knowing that we have all the solutions at our fingertips and that global warming is simply a result of lack of political will. He must have seen that I was upset, I guess, because he answered, "No worries. Your generation might not be able to change it, but we will." I felt old all of a sudden and embarrassed. And while I think he might be right, I believe we all, including our government, owe it to the next generation and ourselves to prove him wrong. You're listening to An Organic Conversation, and we'll be right back after the break.
People say in Wales, and giving your thanks to our seas, my respect to the ones in the forest standing up for our old trees, them giving food to the hungry, hope to the need again, life to a baby girl, careful free, cause there is freedom around us. We have everything we need, and I will care for you, cause you care for me, and we all have opinions. Some of them get through, but there's better people. is more good to do, good to do.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg. I'm excited about our guest today. Here with me in the studio is Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors of the Ecological Farming Association. Thanks for being here with us, Artie, today.
Thank you, Helge.
You came up from Santa Cruz.
I did. There's snow in the mountains.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a rare occurrence.
Is this a busy time for you right now?
It is a busy time, yeah, with... Part of my work is also I'm the food and farming director for Bioneers, and I'm involved in a project called Dreaming New Mexico. And we're looking at New Mexico at the state level. What would a local food shed at the state level look like? 2006, Governor Richardson put together a climate change advisory group and looked at all disciplines, transportation, agriculture, energy, and said, how do we as a state reduce our carbon footprint?
Wow. That's progressive. New Mexico. And you're the president of EcoFarm, an annual conference in Monterey at Asilomar, at this retreat site there that offers workshops on farming of any kind of angle and discusses the future of sustainable agriculture. Tell us more. What is EcoFarm?
Well, EcoFarm nurtures healthy and socially just agriculture, food systems, communities, and environment by bringing people together for education purposes, for alliance building, and for advocacy. And so our flagship event is the EcoFarm Conference at Asilomar, beautiful, beautiful conference grounds.
Every year in January.
This is our 30th anniversary.
Next year, wow.
That's right. It's 1981, 45 pioneering organic farmers, when organic was not on the radar, got together in a firehouse in Willits, California. And this is where the whole thing began, and this year we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary with 1,600 people.
Wow. So it has grown over 30 years from 45 farmers who gathered to now 1,600?
That's right, and I think that's just sort of an example of what's happened in terms of organic agriculture as a whole. So these folks were the earliest pioneers in organic agriculture in California and really in the United States. For many places, there are a few pockets in the states that you can point to that say these are genesis points. And certainly the founding members of EcoFarm are among those pioneers.
What was the motivation? Why did they get together in the first place?
This was not about money, really. It was really about ethics. It was about how do I want to live my life and what do I want to do with my life and how do I produce clean, pure food while I take care of the environment. And that's really what the passionate core value of that group began with.
And where did they gather again?
The first meeting was in Willits, in a firehouse in Willits, California, which is Mendocino County, I believe, yeah. And it's grown from that.
And it has grown rapidly. At one point, it moved to Asilomar, which is a large retreat site that can now host, that's pretty much capacity, right? 1,600 people gathering.
That's right. Asilomar is really one of the most beautiful conference centers you're going to come across. I mean, it's walking distance to the beach. That's the beginning of world famous 17-mile drive, the beach right out front there.
But in Monterey,
but a few people actually even take advantage of that because what's going on inside the conference itself is so compelling and exciting.
Yeah, having gone for years, it's kind of you lose the sense of space and time, right? You're just basically there. What, how many workshops in total? 50 plus workshops on anything you could possibly have interest in, from apple pruning to political water advocacy work to the environment overall to gopher control to you name it, right? It's there. It's offered.
It's the micro and the macro, really, exactly. It goes from the soil and all the way to policy. So global warming, genetic engineering, urban farming, sustainable food systems, lots and lots of really cutting edge educational opportunities for organic farmers to really learn what's the new and most effective way to do it. But it's also includes all kinds of information for people who are involved in the food system in other areas besides farming.
Yeah, from school lunches. I mean, really, it's any topic I could come up with, I know I can find there in one way or another.
It's where I go to learn, really.
And it's usually done in a kind of panel workshop style with lots of space and time for questions and answers after, so you can ask individual questions to the panelists. And then there are keynote addresses.
Yes, and so I mean, really, there's an enormous amount of expertise, not only the presenters, but in the audience itself. So you could be sitting next to someone eating organic food, which is served throughout the whole conference, and find some amazing things that are happening. But some of the keynote speakers this year will be Wes Jackson, Gary Hirschberg, the founder of Stonyfield Farms. Elliot Coleman, the author of Four Season Farming, and others. So, I mean, there's just the list goes on and on.
And one of the early supporters and advocates, and who has been a farmer and a long-time supporter and member of EcoFarm, is now on the phone with us, amigo Bob Cantesano, a living legend as far as I'm concerned. Amigo, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for asking me, Helga.
It's a pleasure to have you. When did you join EcoFarm? How long have you been part of it?
Well, I'm actually the founder of it. I and Martin Barnes and Kathleen Barsotti all originated EcoFarm as a project in 1980, initially as a conference. We called it to Husband the Earth was its first event, and that was in Winters, California, in a firehouse.
So you are part of that first 45 people who gathered in that firehouse, which now has grown into the full EcoFarm conference, attracting 1,600 plus people every year.
That's correct.
What have you seen from the early days to now, in both for the conference itself as well as the overall food movement? I mean, the challenges have changed. I don't want to say we have overcome most of them. They have grown with this movement. But what's like looking back at the last 30 years, what's your take on the state of agriculture and particularly on sustainable agriculture in the state and beyond?
Well, 30 years ago, organic and sustainable agriculture was totally off the radar for everybody and just didn't really exist. There were, a handful of organic farmers in California, and I helped start CCOF in 73. I don't know, there was two dozen of us. It was a really small, mostly dominated by very small farms. The vast majority of the acres are probably under 10 or 15 acres. There's only a couple large-scale farms back in the 70s that were doing organic. So that the conference reflected that. It was predominantly small-scale, diversified farms doing a lot of direct marketing. At the time, there was almost no farmers markets yet, so most people were selling either farm stands or direct to customers that way, and it was kind of predated the era of farmers markets. And, agriculture in general, society didn't have a clue about what was going on with the role of agriculture, and sustainable agriculture wasn't even a topic. The initial name of the EcoFarm group was actually the Committee for Sustainable Agriculture, and we're kind of the people that coined the term or least popularized it and brought it to people's attention, the concept of sustainability in agriculture. At that point, that wasn't happening. So, 30 years later, gee, it's a big topic. We've got farms of all scale and all different crops and all parts of the world now farming organically, and it's a topic that's gotten the attention of the government at all different levels and research community, and the conference has grown from that first conference. We had a single speaker and 45 attendees to now we got I don't know, 100-odd people speaking and 1,600 people showing up in a big, much grander event, a lot more celebration of the culture part of agriculture. So I think this has been a phenomenal change in that 30-year period. We're still a small fraction of the whole movement of agriculture, but we're the healthiest and most vibrant part of it, and it shows. The conference is a very vibrant event, which is directly reflective of the humans that attend it.
And so you mentioned you helped start CCOF, which is California's Certified Organic Farmers, the first West Coast certifier, which really laid the foundation to develop organic practices and standards that were defined, right, for consumers and really meant the same if you were growing in Northern California or Southern California.
Yeah, in 72, their Rodale Press came out and tried to do some initial certification, and they actually established the program. And then they decided they didn't want to continue to do that. The farmers themselves stepped into the process. There wasn't any regulations or even general agreement on what the term organic was, so CCOF bounded together as a nonprofit organization and established a set of rules that people join the organization as volunteers and voluntarily join it, rather, and decided to become certified. And it was a very simple process back in those days. Typically, a farmer would inspect another farmer, and that's how the process would happen. And the rules were very minimal at the time because we really didn't fully understand all the ramifications of agriculture. But CCOF did start the ball rolling, and eventually that became a state law, and then that became started to get enforced in 79, and it just grown from there.
And it became a federal law, and the California standards that you helped develop were part of the basis of the federal law, right, which became legally binding in 2002.
That's correct. Well, California was and may still be the largest producer of organic foods in the country, and the rules were established to kind of meet the organic needs and system of the kinds of crops we grow here. It didn't address the rest of the country, but the rules of the rest of the country were quite different. You know, there was a lot of variation in what the standards were, so the federal law was intended to kind of harmonize the set of rules so that what was grown in California was the same set of standards as it was in Iowa or Nebraska. And that's kind of where these laws came from eventually.
So 30 years of EcoFarm, what was your intention? What was your motivation to gather these 40 people in that firehouse?
Well, I just felt that there was really a need to celebrate and to educate, and that we were kind of all doing our own things by ourselves. There weren't very much interaction between farmers other than if they were neighbors or in the same general region. And I thought it would be really good if people would get together and share story, teach each other, and then also celebrate. Agriculture is a culture, and we had kind of gotten ourselves down a path in the 60s and 70s there where it was a one-person, one-farm kind of situation, and I felt it was really important for us to
community.
Celebrate that heritage.
Yes.
So we brought that to the forefront of joining together to both celebrate and educate.
And celebrate you do. That motto has not changed really over the 30 years, right, in the essence of it?
No, I think, in fact, it's gotten even more important. I think the combination of the two things are really why so many people come to this, why people are excited about it. I've had people tell me, I was really kind of feeling bad about farming. You know, December and January is kind of the short days of the year, and you're thinking back about the past. And to come to the conference and get a whole new spark of life because you're hanging out with your brethren and you're feeling good about it and you're celebrating and dancing and eating food together and all the other things we do, and that brings a spark back into folks that oftentimes it's a pretty lonely lifestyle doing ag. So this gets everybody together. It's like, oh, the same people in the same boat. Makes you feel good about it.
And yes, so true. It's there were some conferences that I have attended where I just, try to get into as many workshops as possible. And then literally there were a couple where I caught maybe two or three sessions because I just ran into so many people that I ended up knowing or ended up speaking with. It was just more about the community gathering. And it's really both, right? It's as much about knowledge as it is just about coming together once a year to find that kindred spirit in sustainable agriculture paired with the knowledge.
Yeah, that's really true. It is actually that gathering once a year, and it brings back all those feelings. And for a lot of people, the best part of the conference is what goes on in the hallways. They go to the meetings and listen and learn, but it's that interaction with those people they haven't seen in a year and they really miss, and they get together and celebrate and have some fun together.
Amigo Bob Cantesano, farmer and longtime supporter and member of EcoFarm and actually part of that First 45 group. Thank you so much for joining us today, Bob. Good luck, and I'll see you in January at EcoFarm.
All right. Thanks, Albert.
Thank you. Thanks for being on the show. And you're listening to An Organic Conversation. Here in the studio with me is Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors. Artie, why are you involved? What's really the draw for you to go on the board, serve, give your time, be a volunteer, and become the president and steer this? Why is this so close to your heart?
Well, we just talked to Amigo, EcoFarm has really been a leader in sustainable agriculture in California for 30 years. ecological farming, organic agriculture, I got into this really out of personal self-interest. When I, you know, way back when, I wanted to be healthy. I wanted to know what I needed to do to be the most healthy person I could be. And as I started to look into that, food became the centerpiece of that equation. And the more I looked into food, then the question arises, how is it grown? And what does that, and what impact does that have on the people who grow it, the people who eat it, the environment, the birds, the insects, the plants?
The community.
Exactly, right? So community is exactly what Amigo was talking about, and we can compare that to the commodity ethic of industrial agriculture. So really the healing that can take place, because agriculture, industrial agriculture, is such a big player in terms of being one of the most toxic industries worldwide, one of a significant source of greenhouse gas emissions. So how do we turn that around and at the same time do exactly what Amigo said, through learning and celebration while we're healing ourselves and the planet? So this is the foundation for me to become involved.
To give back. Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors of the Ecological Farming Association, with EcoFarm coming up on January 20th, an annual gathering of now over 1,600 people who are interested in food from one or another angle. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and we'll be right back after the break.
Can you surrey? Can you picnic? Whoa, whoa, can you surrey? Can you picnic? Come on, come on and surrey down. Jane was told so. Picnic, surrey down. Jane was told so. Picnic, there'll be lots of time and wine. Red, yellow, honey,
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family-owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our plates. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and we are talking about EcoFarm today, the leading sustainable agriculture conference in California and one of the leading conferences in the nation, looking at food from many, many different angles, a gathering of over 1,600 people every year in January at Asilomar in Monterey, California. In the studio here with me is the president of the board of directors, Artie Mangan, and on the phone with us, joining us now from Kansas, is Wes Jackson, president of the Land Institute and the recipient of the Right Livelihood Award in 2000, the alternative sustainable equivalent of the Nobel Prize. Welcome, Wes, to the show.
Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to have you. Your life is completely dedicated to agriculture and has been from a very young age on. You have connected the health of society with the health of soils for decades. When did that connection become clear for you?
Well, I don't know when it became clear. I do know when it became clear that agriculture was in trouble, and in a rather serious sort of way, and that would have been in the early to mid-70s, before I'd more or less taken it for granted.
And but, what was the picture then, that was presenting itself?
Yeah, that, I saw the General Accounting Office study of 1977, that looked as though soil erosion was as bad in the 70s as it was in the 1930s when it was the Soil Conservation Service was started under President Roosevelt.
And so soil erosion, the loss of topsoil, I know you speak a lot about the Dust Bowl, thunderstorms. How is that all tied together?
Well, the problem had its beginnings some 10 or 11,000 years ago with the beginning of agriculture itself, and probably somewhere in the Zagros Mountains of western Iran when the first wheat was discovered and cultivation began and the tearing up of the land that was formerly held in place by perennials. Essentially all of nature's ecosystems feature perennials, that is, plants that keep coming up every year, grown in mixtures. And agriculture reversed that by featuring annuals grown in monocultures. And so if we just take the grain crops alone, responsible for about 70% of our calories and also about 70% of the acreage, both in the United States and in the world, they feature these annual monocultures, the wheat, the rice, the wheat, the corn, the soybeans, and so on. So that's what we call the problem of agriculture, and that's the problem that needs solved. And then, of course, the problem of adding chemicals and the problem of fossil fuel dependency and so on, particularly in industrial times.
So what are you focused on with the Land Institute that you're a president of? What's the
We're mostly
objective?
Plant breeders. My training is in genetics, and we have geneticists, plant breeders there, plus an ecologist. And we're trying to build an agriculture based on the way a natural ecosystem works to bring the processes of the wild to the farm. So our plant breeders are perennializing the major crops, rice in China. We're supporting the upland rice, where soil erosion is terrible, not the paddy rice. Wheat, we're working on the perennialization of the annual wheat, plus we've domesticated a wild perennial, and we hope to have that available for agronomic studies on a larger scale in the 10 to 12 year time frame. We're also working on sunflowers, an important oilseed crop, and another wild legume we call Illinois bundleflower. But we've got to get wheat, rice, corn, sunflowers. Those are the crops, and also soybean or some soybean equivalent. Those are the crops that we need to have be perennial with their extensive perennial roots, and where practical for them to be grown in mixtures so that we can take advantage of the efficiencies that are inherent within the natural integrities that we find within a natural ecosystem.
So in a way, your entire work is focused on soil preservation in one way or another.
And water.
How is that tied together?
Yeah, soil and water resources are more or less being ignored now in the same way that 30 years ago we were ignoring the problem of climate change and also the problem of peak oil.
Which brings us kind of directly to the Asilomar Declaration. You were an early signer of the Asilomar Declaration developed out of EcoFarm. Tell us about it. What is it, and what does it say, and what's its intention?
Well, I can't remember what it says, but it must have said what I approve of, or I wouldn't have signed it. The idea of sustainability, generally, in agriculture, was being called into question. And so the reality that we have soil erosion, chemical contamination, fossil fuel dependency, we all realize this can't go on and on, and that we need practices, and we need government validating those practices, and indeed researching those sort of practices.
And you went all the way to Washington, and you are working with the U.S. government on acknowledging how our society is dependent on the quality and our relationship to the soil.
Well, we've gone to Washington. Fred Kirschman, Wendell Berry, and I took what we call a 50-year farm bill to Washington. And the idea there is that the 5-year farm bills be mileposts toward a gradual increasing the perennial vegetative cover on the landscape. Now, we're not talking about the vegetables. You know, that's quite all right for them to be annuals. The scale usually is small enough, and attention can be paid. But we did take this to the Office of the Secretary of Agriculture, personally handed it to the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, and that was back in July, and we have not heard back, and that's something that I will be bringing up at Asilomar, if in fact we haven't yet heard back.
Yes, you're a speaker again for the upcoming conference in January, and on January 20th to the 23rd in Monterey, EcoFarm 30 years. Why is EcoFarm so critical, and why do you keep coming back?
Well, I see the EcoFarm people here, the California folk in particular, have what I call the consciousness, the sophisticated thought on the need for a resilient or sustainable agriculture. And I'm also thinking the people in the Northeast of the U.S. are in that category. And yet, where I am between the Rocky Mountains and the Appalachians is considered flyover country. And yet, here is where the soil is being eroded, where we're putting the pesticides down, and where we're heavily dependent upon fossil fuels, and it's all driven by the commodities folk. And so partly to offset the balance of payment deficit for foreign oil and so on. So I'm going to say we need your help, because you folks have the consciousness, but here's where 70% of the calories are. In fact, I'm willing to make a small bet that 70% of the calories that Californians eat comes over the Sierra Nevada and up from Mexico. And here is California, the number one state in terms of dollars, number one state as far as agriculture is concerned. And yet it doesn't match where the calories, in fact, are. But here's where the consciousness is to what we need to do is close the gap. Maybe that ought to be our rallying cry. From the East Coast to the West Coast, in between is a gap. And so let's close the gap. And so I'm going to say, look, we need your help.
Beautiful. Wes Jackson, the president of the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, and the recipient of the Right Livelihood Award in 2000, and keynote on the upcoming EcoFarm conference in January at Asilomar in Monterey. Thank you so much, Wes, for taking the time being on the show today. A pleasure.
Well, thank you for giving attention to it.
And we'll see you in January. And I hope you're hearing from Washington soon.
I do too.
Thank you, Wes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors of EcoFarm. Those are heavy words.
I would just like to underline what Wes just said. Agriculture mimicking ecosystems.
Yes.
Farms not as factories. Agriculture as a biological, a living biological system, not as a chemical system. Joel Salatin in Fresh, the movie, which will be shown at EcoFarm Conference this year, said chemical agriculture is like a drug habit. You need more every year to get the same kick. So we need to go back to get off of the drugs, the chemicals, and get back into nurturing living systems at the biological level.
And closing the gap, it's a very, very strong point to say, yes, vegetable production in California, the coastal regions, always very progressive, and yet really the heart of the matter is at the heartland. It's the center of the United States where we lose topsoil every day, literally, through these practices. Is EcoFarm reaching out to that? Do we have people from those regions coming to the conference in January?
Well, Wes obviously will be there, and he's been a spokesperson for many, many years and at a high level. The conference does have people from all over the country. Quite a few people are from California. As Amigo said, California is one of the early origins of organic agriculture. And as Wes is pointing out, that California folks in general seem to have a very high awareness of it. But I think that's really changing. And I think the whole country is really becoming more and more aware.
And for him to say, please come to our aid. I mean, 1,600 people with the average age, even though there are many, many young farmers, and we want to talk about that in a minute. But average age at the EcoFarm conference, I would say anywhere between 40 and 60-ish.
I don't know the exact number. But
20 and 80.
But maybe it was, you know, what was gratifying to me that at one point during last year's conference, someone asked all the people in their 20s or younger to stand up. And I was quite pleased to see that it was a significant number of people. So young folks, we need young folks. They're essential to this movement. And hopefully we're able to create viable career paths in ecological agriculture and sustainable food systems.
And I know it's one of the goals of EcoFarm and its executive director, Kristen Rosenau, to focus on new young farmers, because as you said, the average age of the farmer in the U.S. is somewhere around 60. And while this movement is growing, we know that within the next 10 years, many, many farmers will retire. And the knowledge, I mean, just at this conference, if we talk about an average age of maybe 50 or 60 years, and 1,600 people, we are talking about 100,000 years of knowledge. So we are losing a significant level of experience, and we got to focus on new young farmers.
And what an opportunity for mentoring young folks coming up with a body of knowledge that will be in attendance at the conference.
And we can talk more about the focus of young farmers with the executive director, who's now joining us on the phone, Kristen Rosenau. Kristen, thank you for taking the time being with us today.
Well, it's great to be here.
So you only have a few weeks left. Are you... How's it going?
Well, this is always a very crazy time of year at the EcoFarm office. You know, we get all of, with the early registration deadline, we get a bunch of registrations all at the same time. And I'm happy to say that it was the same this year as it has been in earlier years. So that means the registration's going well despite the economy. So we're really excited about that. And yeah, now it's just tying up all the details, making sure the speakers, you know, are coming and got their flights and they're going to arrive on time and they know where to go and all of the logistical details, getting that all into place.
Yes, and as Amigo Bob said, you know, January is a good time because that's when people are usually not farming or less involved with the with working with the land. It's really the only time we can gather. But it means no holidays for you, right?
I mean, this is kind of... Yeah, it's we just take those couple of days off and we just keep working through it because all of our deadlines with the venue all happen right around the new year. So, but that's it. It's all worth it when the end of January comes and we're all together at Asilomar.
And people can still sign up.
Oh yes, the registration's still open. We still have
a few slots left.
A few slots. Going to be filling up more and more as we head toward the end of the year.
Okay, please stay on the phone. We'll walk people through that, what you're offering this year, your leading organization that is celebrating its 30th year in January at that conference. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. On the phone with me, Christian Rosano, the executive director of EcoFarm, and here in the studio with me, Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors. This is An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. We'll be right back after the break.
Just in reach, when you and sleep escape me, you're like my yo-yo that glowed in the dark, made it special, made it dangerous, so I bury it and forget.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Leigh Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica Skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful. Made by local Bay Area artists and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco. Or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
back here to an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and we are talking EcoFarm, the leading sustainable farming and food conference in the state of California, and one of the leading ones in the nation, an annual gathering of 1,600 plus people from all walks of life, from all kinds of interest in food and sustainable agriculture. And here in the studio with me is Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors of EcoFarm, and on the phone, Kristen Rosano, the executive director. Kristen, thanks again for joining us. Young and old, you have a specific focus on keeping young farmers interested and introducing them to sustainable agriculture. Why is that so critical?
Well, as you mentioned before, you know, we're looking at an aging farming population and trying to figure out how to replace them without losing, you know, many more farms as we've been losing over the last, you know, 20 years at a very rapid rate. And the beautiful thing is that there is great interest among the youth of this country, especially here in California, in farming and food and sustainable food. And we have a whole new crop of, you know, beginning farmers, apprentices, people doing, you know, work in urban areas on food justice and urban gardening. It's just incredible how this has blossomed over the last few years. And the EcoFarm Conference has reflected that, and the youth population at the conference has grown quite a bit. I don't have exact numbers on that because we haven't traditionally tracked, you know, where people break down by age. But just in being at the conference over the last, you know, three to four years, the number of youth has really expanded, and the number of youth asking for scholarships to attend the conference has greatly expanded as well.
And you are raising a really good point that food production and the way we grow food and the way we sell food and ship food, it all has an effect on really every level of society and community, including underserved communities. You brought up the social justice piece. So what are some of the workshops that EcoFarm will offer in January that are specifically geared towards youth activism in that sense, young farmer education?
Yeah, we actually have one of our plenary sessions is specifically dedicated to this topic. It will feature new leaders in activism for food and farm justice. And it's the attempt there is to reflect the increasingly diverse, urban-based, rooted in social justice leaders of the sustainable food and farming movement and how that's changing with this younger generation as they're taking their place. We also have a follow-up workshop with those same leaders that will get further into the, you know, practical organizing and, you know, techniques involved with their work. And then we have a whole slew of different workshops that, you know, apply to that population, whether it be school gardens or, you know, practical course things on soil fertility or nuts and bolts of bookkeeping for a nonprofit farm, those types of issues.
Beautiful. And people can apply for a few selected seats that are sponsored, that are underwritten, if they don't have the funds to come, right?
Well, actually, the scholarship deadline has already passed. We had over 75 applications for 27 slots, basically.
So there's way more interest, and if we had more funding for EcoFarm, we could offer more spots to young farmers.
Right, and we actually were just recently able to expand that program through some support from Horizon Organic and Organic Valley. They both piped in with some additional support for us, and our Gen Next scholarships, which are specifically for beginning farmers, we originally only had funding from the USDA for 7, and we've now been able to give 13.
Beautiful. And that tie-in of, you know, from really small-scale farmers to larger farms, such as Earthbound, which has been a supporter of EcoFarm for years and years, it's really the importance of the conference has been acknowledged and is understood and is supported throughout the entire sustainable farming community in the state and beyond. Is that an overstatement?
If you're talking about the diversity of the people that participate with us and the types of farms and businesses, you know, we have everything from the 0.5 micro farm to some of the biggest, you know, organic agricultural producers in the world. And, you know, our attitude as EcoFarm is that it's not about size, it's really about how you do it. And we want to hear everyone's ideas, and anybody who's trying to farm in a way that's more healthy for the environment, more healthy for people, that we want to be in conversation with you to see how we can all work together.
Yes, it's really a gathering of, even if we have other opinions at times, we got to figure it out. We got to come together at the same table, and EcoFarm every year offers that opportunity. If people want to get involved, you have a website. Can people make a pledge there as well?
Yes, through the online registration process, eco-farm.org. You can register online. You can make scholarship donations online. You can donate to the organization online, all through that same process, or you could call the office.
And it's a 30-year anniversary. That's really pretty unbelievable. It's exceptional that over 30 years this has grown now to 1,600 plus people. We were just saying it's about 100,000 years of knowledge coming together in January. What are your plans for this year specifically? You have keynote speakers such as Wes Jackson, Elliot Coleman.
We have one of the strongest plenary lineups we've had in years, and we're just thrilled to be celebrating our 30th anniversary with such a high-powered group of people. Speaking alongside Wes Jackson will be Francis Moore LePay, author of A Diet for a Small Planet and several other books.
And now Diet for a Hot Planet,
right? Yeah.
Her new book coming out.
She also has another one she's working on called Liberation Ecology,
yeah,
which sounds really interesting. Richard Merrill also will be speaking with them, the author of Radical Agriculture, one of the first books on sustainable agriculture written back in the 70s. Then I've already talked about our youth leaders plenary, and then the closing plenary features Elliot Coleman, the four-season farmer, you know, small-scale organic farmer in the Northeast, who's, you know, famous for his innovative techniques in farming through some very harsh conditions in the winter. And alongside him will be Gary Hirschberg, the CEO of Stonyfield Yogurt, and another local farmer from our Central Coast area, Dick Pichot, the founder and head farmer of Lakeside Organic Gardens. And those three will be discussing the issue that you just brought up earlier, scale in organic agriculture, and some of these issues about is small the only beautiful, or can large scale keep to the values and principles of sustainable agriculture while growing and becoming, you know, having greater distribution.
Such a great topic, so important. Thank you for driving the agenda and for providing an environment for 4 days or 3 days where we can gather and really create that dialogue and that think tank. It's beautiful. Kristen Rosenau, Executive Director of EcoFarm, the leading agricultural sustainable conference in California, coming up on January 20th to the 23rd. And tell us that website again. It's
eco-farm.org.
Great. For more information and how to sign up, good luck. I'll see you in January.
Okay. Thanks
for joining us today. Artie, the Ecological Farming Association, who puts on EcoFarm every year, is not just focused on providing that single conference. There's actually more that EFA as an association does. You mentioned that earlier. There are other conferences throughout the year throughout California, and then there's policy work. What's the framework?
The full array includes festivals in the Central Valley. There's the Hosedown Festival that 4,500 people attend at the wonderful Full Belly Farm.
Every fall. October.
There's a brand new event that we call Dirt to Dining. It's a wine tasting paired with farmers, led by Jesse Cool, the wonderful
legendary chef,
author. And then there's a couple of really exciting programs that EcoFarm is involved in. One is around water. It's the California Alliance for Sustainable, the California Alliance for Water Stewardship, which is going to be producing some forums on how water can be used. California is in a crisis right now. Farmers will not be getting the amount of water that they need. It's a huge issue, and it's not going to go away. We can't blame it on the Delta smelt. The Delta smelt is a canary in the coal mine, not the cause of the problem.
And then climate is one other area.
And another whole coalition that we're part of is CalCan. And that's where agriculture and climate change. So what are the strategies for mitigation? What are the strategies for adaptation? And again, we'll be producing educational conferences around those critical issues.
And then we have the Heartland Conference.
Heartland is right. That takes place in the Central Valley. It's a whole different constituency from the folks that meet on the coast at the Asilomar. Touching, you know, all demographics and critical issues.
Wonderful. And that about already wraps it up. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you to our guests today here with me in the studio, Artie Mangan, the president of the board of directors of the Ecological Farming Association. Thanks for being here with us, Artie. Really a pleasure.
Thank you, Helga.
And on the phone, the executive director of EcoFarm, Kristen Rosenow. And also on the phone earlier, amigo Bob Cantasano, farmer, food advocate, and longtime supporter and member of EcoFarm. And last but not least, Wes Jackson, the president of the Land Institute and the year 2000 recipient of the Right Livelihood Award. Thank you all. Great to have you. Again, that website for more information is eco-farm.org. For the upcoming EcoFarm conference in January in Monterey, the 30th anniversary of this critical conference for the future of sustainable agriculture in California and throughout the nation. An Organic Conversation is produced by our wonderful Heidi Hartley. Broadcast sound engineer is our fantastic Kareem Edwards. Amazing production assistant is Justin Hirigoyen. Underwriting production provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and also always thanks to the team here at Green 960, our very own Fab Five, Corey Kelward, Mark McNone, Chris Gardinier, and of course John Scott and John Plessis. Also always thank you, our listeners, for being part of this show and for actually listening. For blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. You can also now find us on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod to take us with you on the road. If you would like to read my blog, please visit helgahelberg.com. And you can also follow us now on Facebook and Twitter. Both look for An Organic Conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. Coming up next is the Gavin Newsom Show, so please stay tuned. I hope to see you at EcoFarm in Monterey, Asilomar, in January. I will be there for sure. Again, that website is eco-farm.org. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960.